On today's podcast, comedian and ABC journalist Ange Lafoy-Pierre joins me to discuss her new show and whether killing spiders does take away a part of your imagination. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I think something just crawled across my shoulders here on Big Squid. Hello, and here we are in 2022, continuing the latest season of Big Squid. I've been quiet the last couple of weeks. That was not the initial plan. I've been dealing with some personal stuff, which you will hear me discuss in the chat with Ange in a second. Nothing bad. Everything's good. It's just been a very tricky start to the year and, you know, a weird start to the year. I don't know if this is the same for you, but I'm finding a lot of my friends and I are in a similar position, which is I just feel exhausted. Like, normally it's the start of the year and you're like, great, start of the year, let's do this, let's roll. And this year it's like, oh, I guess I have to get back to it. Yuck. I don't know. There just hasn't been that little bump. Maybe that bump will come towards the end of January. Look, a lot of mine can be put down to having a very short break, but I don't know. This year just doesn't seem to have the same pep at the start that it normally would. And basically what I did was, when I'm feeling this way, when I'm feeling a little bit exhausted, when I'm feeling a bit out of sorts, I had a few annoying things happen with some people, nothing major once again, but just a couple of things that put me on the back foot. And what I did was, I'm just going to shut myself off from everyone, I'm going to take some time to recalibrate, and then once I've reset, then I'll start the year properly. You know, sometimes I get people who say to me, hey, you should reach out, you should give me a call. I'm here to talk to you. I'm here to discuss things. And I'm 49. Sometimes I just work it out on my own, you know. I know, for the most part, the best way to deal with these kinds of things. And the best way to deal with this sometimes is just to have some breathing space from the rest of the world. So I've been reading and just watching a few classic movies and just getting myself back into the swing of things. So anyway, look, I hope you've had some time off, and I hope you've managed to avoid catching COVID wherever you are. And if you have caught COVID, I hope that you're on the mend. This year we're going to be expanding what we're doing on Big Squid with a number of new ideas and some segments that are going to go from being experimental to being a regular thing. After the brilliant reaction to our first season of Space Podyssey, Ben Elwood and I have decided that we're going to be bringing that back very soon with a whole new list of movies and guests who are very much keen to be a part of it. And also a guest that we had in the first season is very much already picked out the movie he'd like to discuss for this next season. So we will be bringing back Space Podyssey. That will be coming up very soon. Ben and I are also returning to our deep dive on director David Lynch with our next episode covering Blue Velvet. That will be coming out very soon as well. That one's all ready to go. So I'll just sort out when is best to drop that into the feed. I'm just giving you a heads up now so you can squeeze watching that in before we release that podcast. Garth Jones is returning with his Ozploitation segment, Past the Amel, and we've already planned the whole year for that. I know, the whole year. Garth just sent through a list of things that he wanted to do. He said, I hope that's not a bad thing. I was like, not at all. It's very exciting. So we will be doing that. And on our Patreon, I've been showing some works in progress for a storytelling segment called Beautiful Tales for the Disenchanted. That is something that I'm planning to introduce into the main feed over the next couple of weeks. I love doing this podcast, but I don't want to be reduced to just being a reviewer. That's kind of what ends up happening. You talk about everything else that everyone else is, creating, and then you forget to create. And since I'm not doing a lot of stand-up at the moment, I have this itch that needs to be scratched. So I will be bringing that into the main feed, and then we have some thoughts on where we will take that over the rest of this year. If you're new to the podcast, each episode is dedicated to a Patreon subscriber, and today's shout out goes to Mark. And that's it. Just Mark. I have no idea what his last name is, and I choose to believe he doesn't have a last name. I choose to believe he's like Cher or Madonna or Prince. They are... Mark is one of those. He's the Cher / Madonna / Prince of the Big Squid community. A person so important and famous, you don't need a last name. It's just Mark. So, total respect, Mark. I wouldn't share my last name with me either. Thank you for being a Patreon subscriber, and I hope you enjoy not only this episode, but what we have planned for the rest of the year. If you'd like to be able to access our specialized podcast, we do some Q&As that are just for people on the Patreon, and they get to ask questions, they get to help shape those episodes. Or if you want to hear the works in progress and see what's going to be worked on that will eventually be introduced into this feed, or if you just want an episode dedicated to you, or you want to read the scripts for our previous episodes, I'm actually at the moment just going back over the original scripts for the very first season of Big Squid, which was all about Watchmen. So I'm going to be releasing them throughout January and February as well. So if these are things that interest you and you would like to be a part of that, you can head over and find us at patreon.com/JustinHamilton_BigSquid, and you will find a tier that suits you. Let's bring in Ange Lafoy-Pierre to discuss her new show. We're also going to discuss our possibly incorrect belief about spiders. That's all my fault as well. I may have told her something that's not actually true, but we're still subscribing to it anyway. And what I'll do is I'll let you know where I'm going to put up some links that you can find tickets for her brand new show at the end of the podcast. But I'll stop banging on and continue to bang on while talking to Ange. I was in Adelaide and I was thinking specifically of you at a very specific point in my trip back home. I wasn't back home for long, but I was staying at Mum's house and it was pretty late, and I went to the bathroom and, you do what you do in the bathroom. Let's not get into that. It's not an important part of the story. And when I looked down, there was a huntsman the size of, like, probably with its legs outstretched, probably like a child's baseball mitten.
Right.
So it's pretty big.
So, like, larger than an adult human's hand.
Yeah. Maybe, probably about, like, with my fingers stretched out, that's probably the exact size of it.
That's a huge spider.
It's a big spider. And it had been, like, right next to the porcelain where my leg had been. Mm. And
not your leg.
Like, my most important part of me. Like,
exactly.
It's my favourite part. Everyone knows how I feel about my left calf muscle.
Protect the leg.
Yeah. So, your first reaction is to want to cry. Mm-hmm. And then after you've gotten over that incredibly emasculating moment, you're like, I've got to deal with this because I can't come down here in the middle of the night and not know where this spider is. Like, what happens if I go to the toilet again and it crawls up my ass? Or I don't know how spiders work, Don't we eat 3 spiders a year, supposedly, in our sleep?
Oh, yeah. There's all sorts of weird little... And then they take a real stab, I think, a lot of those guys. three. I don't know how empirical that research is. But,
no, I don't know either. But it's enough that once you read it, you can never shake it.
That's right.
So anyway, I decided I've got to catch it and set it free because of our conversations in the past.
Yes.
I think I ruined you by telling you that.
You did. You're in my show, actually. We'll come to that. But you're in my show. Yeah.
In a good way? I've been in a show before.
Yes. I think you come off as the morally...
That was way too much of a stumble.
Like less than a second, but it probably felt like longer to you.
That was 7 minutes. I just looked down. That was 7 minutes of you having a think about that.
No, well, I was trying to, yeah.
I had to catch the...
Yes, we'll get to the spider.
But I had to catch the spider and I had to find a bowl that was big enough to...
slide the paper under. Yeah,
and then you've got to make sure the paper's firm enough. Like it can't be flimsy paper because the spiders.
You can't use tissue paper or something.
No, this thing's massive. It's got like this thing's got tattoos. It's got I can see a six pack on it. Like totally. It's massive.
Yeah.
Anyway, it took me ages to finally catch it and then to throw it outside to safety, and was way too awake afterwards, like I'd achieved something. Like it was really hard not to call you. This would have been about 11, it would have been about midnight for you.
I would have been happy to get that call, you know.
Would you?
I was asleep, because I just think, I don't know. First of all, it's such a powerful association to have, because those are very... I want to hear the end of the story, but...
That's essentially it. I saved this spider, I threw it out, and felt... like the dumbest sense of, I've really accomplished something.
Yeah, okay. So what would you say the percentage breakdown was of like sort of some sort of moral superiority? Like how much of the feeling was smug and how much of it was like, I am the master of nature. I'm the top of the food chain.
There was definitely no smugness.
Okay.
It was, I reckon it was 85% relief. 10%, like I was a good person. Maybe that's where the smug comes in. Oh, yeah, look at me, I'm a good person. And then 5% feeling down on myself for... Because, by the way, this story took way longer than that, but essentially it would just be me saying, and then I tried to put the bowl down, then it moved to the left and I missed it, and then I had to get my nerves back up and then pick up the bowl and then try, and then it was stuck in the corner and I couldn't get it, so I had to... And you know what? We don't need all of that because that goes on for ages.
Right. Well, I mean...
So I terrified the spider, but I saved it.
But this is why I'm pleased to because you really fucked me up when you told me that time you kill a spider, a part of your imagination dies.
That was an Irish proverb that I was told.
Because I've tried to look that up online since then, and I haven't been able to find it. You know, when you look for like weird, it's magic. Like you're not gonna like it's superstition. You're not gonna find, you know, like a paper in the Lancet about how part of your imagination dies.
Right.
But you want like, you know, somewhere. Surely it's somewhere on the internet if it's a thing. Like if it's a proverb or enough of a superstition. You know, it belongs to a culture. It doesn't just belong to you, Justin.
Right.
And so I looked it up, and it doesn't seem to like nowhere was it like the Irish think this.
Right.
So I'm not saying you're wrong. I mean, I
no. Cut to me. Like if we could go, like if this was a movie, cut to me, I'm 24, I'm in a bar, an Irishman tells me this, I go, oh yeah, no worries. I walk off and the scene stays with him and he turns around and says, what a gullible fucker.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, this is you. But in the same way that you don't ever forget the, you know, you swallow three spiders a year thing.
Right.
Once you said that to me, I could never unthink it,
right,
unhear it. And no matter how many times I Googled it and I was like, the Irish don't think this, there was always going to be a little part of me that wondered if that was the case.
Right.
Even though I don't believe in magic, as discussed previously on this podcast.
Yes.
Now, after that point, I started saving all the spiders.
Right.
Which seemed to correlate.
All of them.
Well, yeah, I ran around from house to house, door knocking.
Busy summer.
Look, it wasn't the best in terms of public health measures, running from door to door saving spiders, but that's actually how I got COVID. But
I passed on COVID to thousands of people, but the spiders and my imagination intact.
Yeah, exactly. Totally intact. In fact, I think it might be recovering, kind of like the ozone layer.
Right.
Maybe is that an Irish rule as well? Like if you save enough... then all the spiders, you know, it patches the hole in your imagination.
Maybe that's how we're meant to fix the environment. Like, we keep doing it with science and people push back against science. So if we say it mystically, you know, for every tree that you save, your hard-on will stay harder for an extra 30 seconds. Oh, really? Fuck, I better get to it.
Yeah, I've often thought the big mistake was that we kept on insisting that there was evidence for a lot of the claims made, you know, vis-a-vis how to deal with COVID or how to deal with climate change.
Yeah.
If we just sort of gave it a sort of spooky mist about it and had it be tweeted by an anonymous account in the like QAnon universe, maybe we might get a little bit more traction with those. Anyway, we digress.
No, but that's a really good point, because this whole world and society is essentially run by people who believe in different imaginary father figures.
Yeah, right.
So why didn't we just sort of say, oh, God won't be happy with you if you cut down a tree?
Well, interestingly, there is a movement within. We've done a thing where we're on about four tangents right now. Yep. But there is
classic podcast for us.
Classic podcast. There is a subset within evangelical Christendom which mm-hmm. I've been fascinated with, which is called creation care, and right. It's the principle. It's kind of where the Greens meet conservative Christian ethics, right. And that ideology. So it's sort of like the Christian ideological approach to climate change, which is like God gave us this gift, and so we absolutely, like, it is a massively offensive thing to do to. Anyway, what I'm saying is, some people have thought of that.
To hurt the earth.
It's like the Gaia, but imaginary daddy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, that's good. Mm. Like, I'm into that kind of Christianity.
Yeah.
Yeah, God gave us this. We should protect it.
I think we just converted Hemo. That's...
No. Well, you know. But I'm into a Jesus who possibly, you know, wears a hat so he doesn't get skin cancer and stuff like that. So, you know, that's a good thing. But, yeah, so I've looked up that spider thing as well and have not been able to find any proof of it since we chatted about it.
It's not just that I'm bad at research, which is encouraging. But, look...
Maybe it's just a little Irish town. Saying, like, do you know what I mean? Like, maybe it's
just that one pub you were in believes that.
Well, in Australia, it was only South Australia and Queensland that called it peanut paste.
Yeah, I've never heard peanut paste before.
Because you're not from South Australia or Queensland.
There you go.
That's what it used to be called, peanut paste.
Yeah, and the UK is famously, and, you know, Ireland as well, famously localised in how they, you know, like you go 20 k's down the road and the accent changes.
Yeah.
Maybe they've got like a 15-kilometre radius of spider superstition culture.
That's it. But it's worked.
It's worked, and it's made it all the way into... my show and into my life. What I was wondering, though, because that's a really big spider that you were describing, is there a threshold? Because after I started saving spiders, there did arrive a point where, you know, the spider would be big enough and I would be tired enough and it would be, like, adept enough at hiding and I was close enough to bed that I was just like, you know what, I'm so sorry, imagination or... like, harmed my imagination or no, you have to die.
Yeah. Like, I'm willing to give up a joke in the 27th minute of my show because I'm going to ruin that bit of my imagination and not be able to find that joining point.
Fully.
Yeah, if I can't get to it, I can't go to sleep with it in my room. I just can't.
So you do kill them sometimes?
Well, like, I haven't since we've talked about everything.
Right.
But I...
Did it re-kickstart that superstition in you? Like, did it bring it closer?
I honestly don't think I'd killed a spider in a very, very, very long time. But I reckon there were probably... back when I was living in Melbourne, which is now, like, 7 years ago, 6 years ago, there would definitely have been times when... specifically in your room, if you can't get to it, and I can't go to sleep with it because, you know, I know it's going to come and lay eggs in my bum or whatever they do. I don't know.
It's always about your butt.
I don't know. Or my mouth or my ear. They're going to crawl up my nose. Did I ever tell you the scariest thing I ever saw?
No.
My friend, I went to a party in Adelaide, and my friend Mal, big guy, used to work at Bolt's Cafe in Adelaide, and a very funny guy. And he was, we were at this party, and lots of people on all sorts of things, drunk, drugs, all sorts of things. And he wasn't talking. Like, he was just sitting there, no one was talking to him, and he just had a funny look on his face. Mm. And then he turned around. And someone said something to him, and he opened his mouth, and a huntsman crawled out of his mouth. And what he'd done is he'd picked it up with his hand, put it in his mouth, and with his tongue pressed its abdomen up against the roof of his mouth, and had waited for enough people to be looking at him to let it come out. And
no one can see my face except you right now, but it's like I've been agog.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. My mouth has been open for a while.
Yeah.
Like, some spiders could feasibly have crawled in.
Could crawl in.
Yeah.
And I just kind of looked. You know when you feel like, sorry, did I just glitch out?
Yeah.
And see...
yeah. Matrix moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck just happened? And the girls next to him screamed, and someone's boyfriend got really angry with him because she was so freaked out. And anyway, and he, you know... whatever the reaction was, he loved it.
What an amazing and peculiar man. Like, I think you could probably, you know, take a sample of maybe a million human beings and the number within that cohort who would, A, think of that.
Yeah.
B, have the nerve to carry it off.
Yeah.
It's vanishingly small. Vanishingly small. There's one. There's one of him in the world. Like, not many. Like, there aren't really many times in your life that you do something and you go, I don't know that anyone's ever done that before. Yeah. In fact, I don't. What? No, actually, no. There would be. But, you know, I'd have to take a moment to think about what those things are. But I don't. When do you do that? When's the last time you did something? You're like, I reckon no one's ever done that in the history of people.
Yeah, I reckon. Well. That's a really good question. I definitely thought it was a one-off. And,
and
I begged him never to do it again.
Oh, no.
Well, I guess, you know, how many times are you at a party where everyone's off their faces that you see a huntsman and have the opportunity to go, hey, here's my party trick.
But I was really hoping you were going to tell me just then that was like that turned – that became his thing, like that he did that.
No. Just, well, I don't know if it became a thing, but it definitely felt like you had to be there to witness it.
Because you'd have to like, you'd have to have like a weird, is it the amygdala that is like pumping out the adrenaline, is the adrenal gland? Anyway, like the parts of your brain that like pump out the emergency chemicals.
Yeah, he must be in complete control of that.
In complete control, or it doesn't exist, which is kind of like, that can happen to, well, not doesn't exist, but like it's kind of faulty, which can give you, like, that's how you end up with, like, I don't know, not to besmirch the good name of base jumpers, but you know, like, people who engage in really extreme activity.
Right.
Like, sometimes it can be that there's this part of their brain that works a little bit differently to everyone else's.
Right.
We wouldn't call it a deficiency so much as we might call it neurodiversity, for example.
Sure.
But maybe that's... he had a cool name as well. What
Mal.
Was it? Mal.
Yeah. So,
yeah, Mal.
Yeah, I reckon he just wasn't scared of spiders. And so we could do something like that. Meanwhile, cut to 2 decades later, and there I am with a bowl spending nearly 50 minutes trying to capture a spider so I can set it free in my mum's backyard.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly that you get to the... my fight flight thing is kind of broken too. I go straight to derealization. Like if something, like a spider the size of, you know, a baseball mitt or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even if it's like some interpersonal drama, like something bad happening in your life, like demonstrably bad, that and your brain would like start pumping out those chemicals. Mine very quickly just goes like, oh, this is an interesting movie.
Right.
And I don't
right.
know when that happened. It's happened to me some point in the last, like, 3 or 4 years where it, like, flipped out into that. It's very helpful for performing comedy, can I say?
Right.
Because you don't ever, like... It can be helpful and it can be an impediment as well because, you know, people talk about, like, being, like, right in it and, like, feeling the kind of energy of performing and, like, that's... You can harness that.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm just kind of like... What an interesting movie. Oh, that woman seems to be bombing. Or, wow, she's doing well.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
whatever. Either way.
Does that mean when... So, depending on your gig, good or bad or, you know, or indifferent or all the different grades, are you able to look at it correctly and take the right things from it or are you a little bit removed that...
I'm quite removed.
Right.
I think I've... And so, I don't really freak out at spiders, even though I'm not, like... not great with them, but like there's no to watch me with them.
Yeah.
I would seem maybe a little more like Mal than like you.
Yeah.
In that I'm just like, huh. Like if I see one on me, I'll just like sort of
Just brush it off
or pick it up and put it on the ground or whatever.
Well, Adelaide was chock full of them everywhere.
Yeah.
Where I was catching up with friends, there was one sitting on my chair. It was Spider Central.
Do you think they were trying to tell you something?
Yeah, I need to see your show. That's what they're doing. I think they're out advertising your show.
Yeah, it's been an expensive marketing campaign in Adelaide because it actually takes quite a bit of money to bribe a spider. Like they've got
right
because
yeah.
they don't actually have a lot of use for money.
Yeah,
like they don't have ABNs.
Yeah,
And so you really have to like throw a lot of money at them for to be like, yeah, okay, we'll do what you want now.
A lot of cash in hand, and then they just take and make a web out of it. And it's bullshit. How is the show looking? I saw that you had some trial shows towards the end of last year. Was
that
right?
Yeah. So I did. I did a couple of like very early versions of a show called Spiders Follow Me, which has now become, so it was kind of like the jumping off point for the new show, which is called I've got 99 problems and here is an exhaustive list of them, which I already regret, really, because the first problem is that every time you you want to register that show somewhere or market that show anywhere, you have to type out the name of that show.
So no, we've all made that
mistake.
That's why you suddenly, if you go through my list of shows, there's just years where the show's called Smash. Snacks, because that's enough.
All lowercase.
All works better as a hashtag. Works just easier.
Ah, yeah, I've got regrets, but look, it's not. It's a good title, I think.
It's funny.
Thank you. So yeah, that's the show. I've got my first show coming up in Newcastle on the 4th of February in the new in the new comedy club up there. So yeah, it's going well. I had, you know, mentally committed to, look, I'm just going to do like a lot of stand up. I'm going to, you know, had the old, I'm going to go back to basics type thing. Because I do tend to just find deranged gimmicks really funny.
Right.
And so I'll often end up, you know, like Zealot had a lot of bones in it. Yeah. I gave a lot of bones to people, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
And some people did as well.
Right.
But
some people freaked out.
Some people were like, I'm holding bones. I didn't know that, you know, is this theater? What's going on?
Yeah.
And
but we need to also point out that your job at the ABC finished.
Oh,
when,
yeah.
When, what month was that? That finished.
Oh, God. It feels like a million years ago, but it was less than a month. It was almost exactly a month. Right. Yeah, exactly a month now that I wrapped up 4 years at the Signal.
Right.
So now I've got all this time to tour that I never had before, which is great. And I'm sort of working on new podcasts for the ABC, but, you know, I've got a pretty relaxed work schedule.
Yeah, it's great.
In comparison to like a daily news podcast anyway, which is the opposite of relaxed. And so, yeah, I'm, but yes, I said to myself, I'm just going to do a stand-up show. And then I was procrastinating writing the stand-up. And, before I knew it, I'd ordered a custom-made spider outfit.
Right.
So...
This is what happens when you have spare time. Yeah. I need a costume.
I need a costume. This show needs to start with a bang, so I'm going to be,
great.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a sense of the flavour.
So before we get back into the show, how are you feeling about the job coming to an end? Because it's only a month.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing there's still a part of you that there'd be still an emotional part of you that would almost feel like you're still on holidays rather than not going back to it.
Well, this is my first holiday in 4 years because normally I just take my holidays for Edinburgh and I go to Edinburgh and I have like a week in Paris or London afterwards, which, you know, when you're kind of just recovering, it's not really holiday so much as it is recovery.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is my first holiday in a long time. The last time I had a holiday, I was kind of like between jobs and confused about what was next, which is sort of, you know, not dissimilar to what's happening right now. And so I don't like holidays and I don't know what to do with them.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at holidaying either. And I was so frustrated because I actually, because I hadn't seen a lot of family or friends, I missed so many birthdays, like big milestone birthdays in the last couple of years in Adelaide. So I went back to Adelaide at the end of last year and spent a bit of time with Mum and then had to cut my holiday short because I was a close COVID case to a good friend who... you know, double vaxxed, got COVID.
Yeah.
And I'd been very careful about where I caught up with people. And especially because I was staying at Mum's house because she has a compromised autoimmune system. Mm-hmm. So even though she's double vaxxed, you know, you still don't want to pass anything on. And then woke up, found out that he had it, booked my flight back to Sydney immediately because I thought I just need to get away from Mum.
Yeah.
Came home, was in isolation, got a test. By the time that came through, found out I didn't have it, which is great.
Mm.
But then it was like, God, it felt like I was just starting to have the holiday. Like, it's like I got home and it was like, you know, there's those first kind of few days where you're unwinding and relaxing and then suddenly it was like, oh, well, it's over.
I had a really similar experience, right? So I finished work and then was like really careful because I was going home to see my mum, who's also got a compromised immune system, weirdly enough. And right. So I was like, okay, I can't because, you know, I've always just had this, you know, awful feeling like if mum gets it, it's not going to be good.
Yes.
You know, so I've just got to, you know, protect mum at all costs.
Yes.
And I was so careful and I wasn't really going places or doing things because I didn't want to, you know, even though I'm double vaxxed and everything, and I was even boosted by this point.
Yeah.
And then I had one outdoor catch up with some friends in Redfern, which is like an annual thing. And we like, you know, dialed it right down this year just to be safe and went along. And it turns out, you know, that the person who was running it had COVID. And we only found out the next day. So and most of my friends, actually, we all had to cancel Christmas because it was, you know, 4 days out from Christmas. And so you couldn't, and it's 3 to 5 days before the symptoms show up or whatever. And so you just couldn't be sure that you didn't have it.
Yes.
And so cancelled Christmas, didn't have it. And I had this thought where I was like, I've never been, at that point I was disappointed not to have it because I'm like, I've just gone like 7 days alone and cancelled Christmas and everything, don't have it.
That's so funny. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't want COVID. I do not want COVID at all. But there was a similar sense of disappointment
What is that?
Gone to all of this trouble and then was totally at a loss as to know how to kind of move forward from that point because it was like, oh, well, I guess now I have all this free time, but I'm now back in my apartment and I'm trying not to work yet. And
Oh, I did my 2007 tax. That's what I did with that little window.
Sorry, 2007?
Yeah. I got like a pointed email from my accountant a few weeks back because, about a month back because, I was like 17. I didn't know that I needed to do tax, but I did because I'd registered in ABN to teach cello at my high school when I was 17, which means that you have to pay tax on like the, you know, $400 or whatever it was that I made. But you don't. You don't have to, but I still had to like register a thing. But that just meant like having to work out what my tax was from... What is that? 15
years ago.
Yeah.
But hang on, like, don't you don't have to worry about your tax after, like, don't you have to keep your records for only...
That's if you do it.
Oh, if you...
If you
I
don't
see.
Do it,
then you have to do
then
it.
Then you have to do it.
Was everything okay?
Yeah, I'd earned, like, a pittance, but I still had to, like, get on the phone to the, like, nice lady at the ATO, and she was like, software doesn't go back this far.
Right.
It was actually this ordeal doing my 2007 tax and probably the most, really depressing. I was like, well, I'm already in a foul mood and I guess this,
might as well do
this
my tax.
Can't get any worse. Yeah. So I'm going to do my 2007 tax.
Right.
anyway, so, you know, got to the 27th, 28th of December or whatever.
Yeah.
Went, I don't have fucking COVID. I guess I'll go and do my New Year's thing. Anyway, get up to New Year's. We're 2 days into our holiday and it's this, you know, group of mates and we rented this house up in the, you know, Northern Rivers or whatever and someone's got COVID. And so we all go, okay, cut the holiday short and drive back. And this time I had it.
Oh, really? Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's why I think I felt extra cheated in hindsight because I was like, well, I've just done this. So I've spent like... I've just to like emerged like in the last couple of days
from
in the 4 weeks since I stopped work, 3 of those weeks have been spent inside an apartment in Stanmore. Yeah.
What a bummer.
Yeah. So I did crack up a bit. Like I cracked up a bit. I also had this bizarre effect when I actually got COVID, which is that I felt almost starstruck. I couldn't quite believe that it was happening to me, like this famous virus that I've heard about for years. I'm like,
pick me.
Me?
Oh.
And it was just as everyone was getting it, so it wasn't quite passé yet. Like, I feel like it's a little bit passé now.
Right, yeah.
You know? Like, I feel like a little bit hacked talking about, you know, how I had COVID.
Funny. Yeah, well, you know what it's going to be now. It's going to be the ultimate status symbol. Well, so you had COVID. Which one did you have? Delta. Whatever.
Yeah.
Omicron.
Omicron. Oh, the latest model. No, I think like...
Poor Georgia Mooney, who got it at the start and was a trailblazer.
And she got long COVID as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor like, sausage.
Yeah. Yeah. That, but, you know, suddenly, it, like, everyone's talking about it.
And I know. Like,
no, she was a trailblazer.
Yeah, she was a trailblazer, and we should remember that and recognize her for it. Yeah. So, but I got like, the bad one. Not the, like, I got Omicron, but I got, like, randomly for no reason, just, like, got it. I had mates who were, like, in and out in 3 days. Right. I'm, like, was just trash for like really? A solid 10 days. Yeah, yeah. No good.
Like,
for no reason. No reason.
Yeah. Well, it trashed in what because, you know, heaps of people were having.
Oh, I had like a weird collection of symptoms. I kept on ordering graphic design that I didn't need.
Is that one of the symptoms?
You start? One of the really weird symptoms. Yeah. I had it so bad.
Yeah.
No, I did do that, but I think it was part of the fever phase for like the first 3 days. I was just kind of like not myself and dealt with it how I deal with most things, which is like go, well, I'll just make myself more busy. I'll just like make my to-do list longer. And so I did that.
Yeah.
But I was like not thinking straight. And so I was like, I would like send all these emails. I had to go back through my sent inbox and like mop up after fever me. It was like when you've like done a lot of drunk texting, except I did fever emailing.
Right.
And I had to go back and be like, what did I send to my producer? Because I've got like a few different producers at the moment, not to brag, but like, you know, it's not a brag at all. No. But I'm an idiot.
Oh, so you've got a few people who want to take advantage of you. Fantastic.
Yes. It's a very good time to be me because I'm doing these tours in Adelaide and Melbourne and Newcastle, and I've got a different producer in each city. And so there's a lot of people to email. And so I had to really go back and be like, what? And some of it was fine, but some of it was, it didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. And were they like, I've just had this thought, and then you're looking, when did I send that? 2:37 a.m. on a Thursday.
Yeah, 2:30, it didn't even matter what time. It was like times, but I was up up at weird hours. Yeah, but I had, I don't know, I had like dizziness and headaches and like weird nausea and just I just had like a bad time with it.
And had you had the booster as well?
I'd had the booster.
Oh.
I was supposed to be peak protection, which makes me wonder what it would have been like if I hadn't been boosted.
Yeah, well, I got I was lucky because when I got to Adelaide, I could get the booster at the local chemist.
Yes.
And so did the, you know how they suggest getting a different booster to the one that you had? So I had double Pfizer, so I got Moderna.
Yeah, I screwed up. I got triple Pfizer.
You got triple Pfizer?
Yeah.
Well, I got the Moderna.
Yeah.
And then
I've always thought of Moderna as the cool vaccine.
Is it?
I don't know why.
You know what it is? It's the 90s indie vaccine. You know, it's got a good haircut.
Yeah.
It's popular, but not with everyone.
Very like, hard to come by for a little while. You know, it's kind of rare, collector's edition.
Yeah, quite thin.
Yeah, quite thin.
Wears good jeans. Where's a little bit of nail polish? Just a little bit. Just on a couple of fingers, just because it's pretty cool. Yeah. So I got that, and then when I caught up with my friend, it was 8 days later. So I reckon that booster was the difference between me getting it. Because I was in the car with my friend for ages. Like he picked me up from Mum's. It was a 20-25 minute drive to his place. Then it was a 15-minute drive to his sister's. We sat next to each other at dinner. We sat next to each other on the lounge. On the way home, it was another 20-minute drive. We sat in the car for half an hour talking about stuff that's going on in his life. And then I went in, and I didn't get it. And like, I couldn't, like, I was in shock. Like, there was also.
You've been doing topics with a lot of sighing in them. Oh, you know, like, you know,
there was a lot of sighing. Not on my
huffing each other's sighs, just huffing them and not getting COVID.
It was a lot of sighs on his behalf. Oh, and his me behalf. Just sort of sitting there going, oh, no. Just oh, no. Them in. So, but I was taking it in.
Yeah.
So I am.
I'm sorry.
I feel very fortunate in that regard.
So you still haven't had it?
I still haven't had it.
How do you feel?
Great. Like, I'm really happy not to get it.
But do you feel vulnerable?
No.
Right. You don't feel, you don't have that kind of like, when you go out, is it like, you know, you've got like a little conveyor belt of thoughts happening and there's, you know, there's a couple that always sort of stay at the front.
Yes.
That's not how conveyor belts work. I've never been in a factory, but you know.
Neither have I, but I agree with you.
but how far, like which, how many thoughts back is like I might get COVID, I might get COVID, I might get COVID thought?
So it's a constant hum.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's like always being careful. But, you know, like I don't mix with many people. I haven't performed in 7 months. I haven't done a gig in 7 months.
Mm.
And kind of don't have an urge to either. And I don't know if part of that is There's a few things going on there, but it's also just a... look, to be honest, I just don't trust other comedians sitting in a green room, especially I reckon there would be heaps of them where you say, hey, have you been careful? And they'd say, yeah, as they're...
in your face, in your like face. Breathe in your face.
Yeah, yeah. Going, yeah. So there's that as well. But I also feel very comfortable going to the movies, which is a thing that a lot of people don't like. Like a lot of my friends won't go to the movies. And
I went to see Licorice Pizza last night and there were a lot of masks off.
Yeah.
People are very... you know.
Oh, in the cinema?
Well, masks off in the cinema.
Well, it's a hard
and in the film, but you know, yeah, that would have been hard to, yeah.
Well, it would have been weird in 1973 for them right, to be exactly. wearing masks. But it is one of those things where it is like you're allowed to sit in the cinema and you can take your mask off when you have a drink or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just kind of feel comfortable because it's not like everyone's going to the cinema. Like Tom Gleason and I went and saw Licorice Pizza. He hadn't seen it yet. There were four of us in the cinema, and Tom and I were the only two together, and there was one person up the front and one person up the back. Yeah. I went and saw The Tragedy of Macbeth in the cinema. It was me. Like, I just keep going to the movies during the day.
I thought you meant like you related to the film. Like, it was me.
It was me. Yeah. I was Macbeth. And, but yeah, no, it was, I was the only person in the cinema. So I think
we've got, I might have even said this to you before, but I think our instruments for assessing risk are completely broken now.
Right.
Like, I don't think we are really capable of, because that, like, I mean, sure, if that's a very thinned out cinema, but the cinema that I was in yesterday was like full of people.
Right.
And I don't know how good we are at assessing, like, that is no, that was as risky as doing a gig.
Yes.
I would say.
Well, no, because nobody's talking and everyone's just looking forwards. So it's different. So that's my reasoning.
In the same direction.
Well, no, but it is. Like, you're not looking at each other, breathing at each other, talking and spitting in each. But at a gig, I'm in a green room with
people. A green room's a bit different.
With comedians who are chock full of everything.
Yeah.
Regret, disease. Comeuppance.
Yeah, full of vitriol and lots of things to prove.
Why am I so angry? Oh, no, I've just caught anger from insert name of middle-aged male white comedian.
Yeah, I mean, well, if that was catching, then we would have had a lot. Yeah, there'd been a pandemic a long time ago.
Oh, no, there's a pandemic of fury running through the Australian comedy scene.
Go to see comedy and leave inexplicably furious.
Oh, I can't work it out. Oh, no, I've caught fury. But yeah, so part of the reason I feel better about it is because if I get it, and I'm sure it's more than likely going to happen, but I'm here by myself and I feel more comfortable isolating and knowing that I can protect anyone around me from passing it on. That's kind of more my issue.
Yeah.
I felt incredibly anxious when I thought that I may have given it to Mum. And I felt incredibly anxious because I'd caught up with two close friends, old friends that I had not seen in a long time and had been at their house. And I was thought, man, have I just taken down Damien's family? Have I just taken down Greg's family? Have I just hurt Mum? And then when I found out I didn't have it and couldn't have passed it on, it was just a relief. So if I get it here,
fine, whatever.
I'll just isolate and I'll make sure that I don't pass it on.
Yeah.
So I think my fear is tapped more into what damage I could do to other people other than what might happen to me.
I am as scared of another 2 weeks of isolation as I am of, like, eventually getting COVID again when whatever immunity wears off is, like...
Right.
Because I spent enough time... I mean, on one level, there's something quite nice about having the world shrink to the exact size of your apartment.
Oh, like I'm more worried that I'm not going to have an excuse to isolate.
It's twofold, isn't it? Like, I don't know which is worse because, like, when the world shrinks to the exact size of your apartment, like, there's only so wrong that things can go in here.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that they can't go wrong. They can go wrong.
Mm.
You can get yourself into quite a mood, but... It's more that there's like a known basement there, you know, like there's a, you know, you can hit like there, you know, that there's a concrete basement, but out there.
Yes.
Who can say?
Yeah.
But you know, I discovered, at some point in the last 2 weeks that I was isolating, something happened to me that had never happened to me before is that I started to get annoyed by my own tattoos.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right. So there are tattoos that I've got that I really like.
Right.
And I started just being like, because I'd spent too much time in like the bedroom that I have is like one wall. It's like one wall of it is a mirror. And so you're like, and that's the only place that I can work. So my partner does his work in like the study, and then there's like I've kind of got the bedroom to work in.
Right.
So I have to do all my work in front of a mirror. I've been spending the 2 weeks mainly in front of a mirror, which I hadn't realized until I just started that sentence a couple of sentences ago. But yeah, it's like it was quite an intense thing, and I got to like see a lot of my tattoos a lot. I'm like, is that what I look like? Is that what they look like? And things that I actually like quite like conceptually, and like look, you know, like looking at occasionally when I glimpse them on my body, I'm like, I wonder how much it costs to get that removed.
Oh, really? Wow.
Which I can never tell to my mother, and I just, you know. Yes.
Why can't you tell your mother that?
Well, because I just think that they didn't like the tattoos to begin with. And so I can't admit this kind of, it's like it would be admitting a failure that I'm just not prepared to.
Yeah.
Also, you know, now that I've had 2 days out the house and I quite like my tattoos again.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So ostensibly what you're saying is, don't make any hard decisions while you're two-thirds of the way into isolation because shit gets unreal.
Don't send emails. Do not. This is, you know, people. I actually had a couple of people get in touch and be like, I need some COVID tips. And I was like, well, I love giving advice. And so here we go.
And you're good with the list.
And I'm great with the list. So I just like, I had a really great time giving people advice for like, well, you know, you can't get good bread delivered on the internet. You can't get meat delivered on the internet. And so if you want either of those things, if meat's something that you eat, there's like a shortage on at the moment. So what you got to do is you got to send a friend to the butcher, then you got to send them to the baker. You also can't get pharmaceuticals delivered online. Not anymore. You used to be able to, but you can't anymore. So you got to get someone to go to the chemist, and you've got to get Panadol, and you got to get this, and you got to get that. And don't have you can't have NSAIDs with, you know, the ibuprofen, you know. And sort of told, I just really enjoyed that. But it should have been a slightly longer list. It should have been like, don't spend too much time with mirrors.
Oh, yes.
Don't do that. Don't send too many emails.
Yeah.
I would say lists became even more important.
Yeah.
Make a list. But then I overcorrected. I made a list that was too long. So I'm like, well, I'm feeling a little, you know, I don't know what the point of me is right now. And so I would like make this list. It's about 40 items long.
Right.
And then, you know, I would get to the end of the following day and I'd done 4 items on the list, which is fine. They were big items.
Fine.
Like, you know, like tax or whatever, you know, like something big that took like a quarter of the day. But I'd be like, there's 36 items left on this list. And we just go to bed feeling like this absolute, like this utter failure, like look at all these things I didn't do. So you got to make the list, but you got to make it the exact right size.
That you feel like you're achieving something. I've done that before. I've made that mistake.
Make the list too long
because I love writing down by hand.
Oh,
and I love
it feels
scribbling.
Good, doesn't it? Oh, it feels so good.
Crossing it out is one of the best things in life, I reckon. Just going through going, did that. Look at you, Hammer. You're the best. Did that. Some of those things are do the dishes, you know, really simple things. But I did it, you know, do the washing, you know. But did you find I found the start of this year to be exhausting, and because of ostensibly not seeing a lot of people at the start of the year, I actually had to ring my manager and ask her, hey, I don't want you to break anyone's confidences, but what are the rest of your clients like? Because I'm feeling exhausted.
Yeah.
And more importantly, I am lacking serious motivation. And it took, and she said that was across the board.
Mm.
And the few people that I've spoken to have felt the same way.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
sounds like I'm being facetious, but like I really didn't know that. So she said that was something that a lot of performers, people in the arts, were experiencing.
Yeah, a lot of comedians that she looks after. Everyone was a bit. It was a bit like, I think intellectually we knew that this was going to be continuing. That's not a surprise, but there is the emotional sense of renewal that comes with New Year's Eve, and so to have that, like even when you know that ostensibly calendars are random numbers that we've decided mean something, right? But
you do
get to January 1st and think, start of a new year, let's get to it.
Also, you know, you got to chop up the time somehow, and you know, it's roughly the amount of time it takes to get around the sun, and like, I'm a big believer in the calendar year.
Yeah, so am I. Like, I'm not against
it. We settled that.
But you know, there is that sense normally of, all right, let's get to it. And this year it was like, oh, well, I guess I'll just do it all again. And it's a funny thing because I've felt like I've fallen out of love with a lot of things that I've loved for all my life, and it was an interesting experience. And the only way I started to get myself out of it was to shut down completely and do a lot of reading and just read and read some things that I normally wouldn't read to just have different voices, different thoughts, different ideas going in.
I went into books this summer as well because I wanted to get out of my head, and I thought that was maybe the most immersive way to do it. It's a lot more rather a lot less passive than, you know, I think engaging with a screen. You know, you really have to kind of switch on in a way to read. Like, you have a reading brain. People talk about having, like, a reading brain.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people talk about deep reading. I don't know if this is the thing that you're familiar with. It's basically just a fancy way of saying, like, rather than reading the way that you normally would, which is, like, with your phone near you and, like, you know, something going on in the background and maybe people nearby, you, like, section yourself off. And you, like, put your phone in another room and you, like, make sure that the lighting's just right. You make it so that there are no interruptions, and people report that the reading experience is really different.
Yes.
And that you go faster that's not the kind of defining aspect. It's more that the impact in your memory and how you engage with the work is really different. Anyway.
I always called that reading.
You call that reading. That's how you do it.
But deep reading makes sense as a modern term, which is something that I do, because if I have any distractions, I'm that classic, what the fuck just happened in the last three pages?
Yeah. And you end up rereading.
Yeah.
But yes, no,
So you were doing a lot of reading.
I did that as well. The feeling of, like, searching around for some sense of, because I really don't know what the rest of the year holds.
Yeah.
And that should be a liberating feeling, especially now that the borders are open. I think that's something that I've tried to promise myself as well, kind of go, okay, make a plan to be overseas. And so that's kind of, you know, back end of the year. But even that's kind of, I don't know, I started learning Italian. Like the best I felt in the last week was this morning, where I kind of went, like, I'm gonna like start learning Italian. I did, like, some Italian lessons, and then, like, dusted off an old playlist I have of Italo disco. I was like, yeah, I mean, it felt like make believe. Like, I was like, this isn't really like, I haven't gone anywhere, I haven't done anything, but it was this, like, minor exercise in imagination, which was kind of enough to just go, like, oh yeah, the world is bigger than this 3-room apartment, and it was very easy to forget that this summer.
Yeah. Did you find that it's affected your show, like all these experiences with COVID? Have you rewritten your show, or has it...
I'll tell you. I'm in the process of rewriting it, actually.
Right. So what was going on before, and what are you changing?
The show initially was kind of... Even though it's not explicitly about this, it was... the whole, like, I think spiders are following me and I'm trying to work out why that is. That's the show.
Yeah.
But it was happening at the time that I was, like, having a period of... Let it be said, horrendous mental ill health,
right.
Like, so unwell, and the breakdown of a relationship that was really unhealthy.
Right.
And I don't want to, like, get into legal trouble by saying anything worse about it than that. But
for sure.
It was a really, and the show isn't about that. Like, it's never, I never am explicit about that, but it's about trying to work out what's real and what's not, and the kind of the way that we all kind of gaslight ourselves. But, you know, for anyone, you know, wondering about it, it's not like, it's not about an abusive relationship. It's kind of, it is, but it's never explicit.
Right.
And so that was the context in which the show was written. And then, and now the world is, my world is very different. Like, I'm quite a distance away from that time, doing a lot better mental health wise. Which maybe tells you something about how bad things were before.
Right.
That, like, 3 weeks of isolation and I'm still doing better than how I was at the time that I conceived of that show.
Right.
And I guess what would be the feature of the time at the moment? Yeah, it's sort of a listlessness and a search for purpose.
Yeah.
And I think... Yeah, I'll come back to me about how that comes out in the show.
How do you gaslight yourself?
You know how we've been talking about we've been talking about superstition.
Yeah.
I think we have an infinite capacity, and it was kind of a theme in Zealot as well in the last show, infinite capacity for magical thinking,
yep,
and superstition. And the whole time that I thought that spiders were following me, I was sort of looking for a reason why. It was like this contest every day between conceiving of the universe as a chaotic place where spiders couldn't possibly be following me.
Yeah.
And then wondering if that was the case, and then if that, you know, if it was happening in an organized way, then what might that be, either from within my mind or outside of me?
Right.
And of course I didn't sit and wonder these things in a literal way, because, you know, I was, you know, I'm a reasonable person, and I was like holding down a job that is, you know, principally concerned with reason. It was a job in journalism and in like making sense of the world. And so it was kind of this weird dualism where during the day I would be, you know, Madam Reason, and then kind of privately and at home be sort of preoccupied with this superstition that something, yeah, some, this kind of Miss Clavel, like something is not right, this is like a warning. And in the end I sort of conceived of it, and I still kind of do in a mythological way, as a like I was being told to leave that relationship.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, hang on, is that gaslighting?
Because
that's you, that's reason, isn't it? Like, isn't gaslighting...
That's not reason at all. Spiders weren't telling me to leave my relationship, Hammo. Well,
but they weren't gaslighting you.
No, they weren't gaslighting me. I was gaslighting myself. I was kind right. of, you're not sure what's true, and then you, well, let me start again. So, you feel as if you need, there's a message that you think it would be reasonable for you to get.
Right.
And you wonder if this is the source of the message.
Yeah.
And then you continually kind of, it's really hard to put into words.
It's like, so you believe you're getting a message from a certain aspect of your life, and therefore you keep seeing the message because you've told yourself that. Is that what you mean?
What do I mean? I think what I'm... Sorry, this is really difficult territory.
No. So hang on. Can I throw something
please.
At you, and then maybe it will be similar or it'll be completely off base. Mm. But so when you were talking about gaslighting yourself, I know that the reason I ask that is because I reckon I do that to myself as well in
yeah.
all sorts of myriad ways.
Yeah.
And mine will often be a confluence of events. So as you can see, I have not had a haircut in 7 or 8 months. And it's like I'm borderline, like, what the fuck happened? I'm trying to look like Guy Pearce and the mayor of Easttown, but I don't have his cheekbones to pull it off. So anyway, I caught myself in the mirror. I looked and went, oh, who is that old guy trying to look young? Oh, no, it's me. And then later on, I was reading a science article that said, according to the way the universe is expanding and the way that dark matter is taking over the universe, we're in the last sixth of whatever this universe is going to be before it tears itself apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that and went, well, you look like shit. You turned 50 in September and we're in the last six of the universe. So what's the fucking point? You probably only got a few years left to live anyway. And then stayed awake till 3 a.m.
Yeah.
So that's how I gaslight myself, with weird ass trips that, you know, all it takes is a glimpse of yourself in a mirror, and then it's like, take a step here, take a step here, and then all the way down the slippery dip to the bottom.
Yeah. I think there's something quite... Yeah, dark at the heart of it, really, which is that I thought that spiders were following me, and that was something that I wasn't really sure about. So initially, there's your first layer of doubt. You're like, I think this is happening, but I'm going to tell myself that I'm crazy, but it does seem to be happening, but it couldn't possibly be happening, but it's obviously happening. And then, you know, inevitably you kind of go, oh, well, the fault is with me.
Right.
Like I'm having a problem of perception here.
Yeah.
I must be crazy on some level. But you hold both, like, in almost a quantum way, you hold
yeah.
both realities in your head as plausible, yeah. because you can't work out which is true.
Yep.
So you hold in the one hand and the other hand concurrently, I'm not being followed by spiders. I am being followed by spiders.
Yes.
And then in this multiple choice, choose your own adventure reality that you're building for yourself as you go,
yeah.
whilst concurrently holding those two, you also then start to hold another fork that springs from I'm being followed by spiders, which
right.
is why am I being followed by spiders?
Right.
And then you start thinking about all the reasons that you might be being followed by spiders, all the while saying to yourself, but of course I'm not being followed by spiders. That's the caveat at the beginning of every sentence. But then you go, sure, but if I were being followed by spiders,
right, right,
why might that be happening? And how might that be happening? And how might I respond to it? Is it that they want revenge because of all the ones that I killed before? Maybe I'll stop killing them. And sure, that will mean more spiders are following me by definition because I'm wiping less of them out as I go. But the ones that are following me will be less vengeful because I will have let more of their relatives live.
Right.
And so let's try that as an approach for a while. I seem to still be being followed by spiders. I'm sure it's just a coincidence or I'm just noticing more of them. And then you kind of like off in another fork, which is like, oh, well, maybe they're not following me more, but maybe I'm just noticing them more. In which case, you're back to like scenario, let's call it A or 1A.
Yeah.
Scenario 1A, which is like you're crazy.
Yeah.
Where was I? I'm getting lost in my own tree. Oh, yeah. I must just be noticing them more. So the problem is perception. And so you can kind of see, and then you're like, but you're telling yourself you're wrong at every turn, all the while having this experience, which is quite real, which is, I found a spider in the fridge today. There was a spider in my car. Was it a spider in the ocean? There is a spider in my shoe.
Right.
There's two spiders there now. Like, it's just...
right.
And that went on for a solid 6 months.
Oh, my Lord. That is tiring.
Yes.
Because it's not like they're the only thoughts going on.
Yeah.
There's other thoughts as well.
Oh, yeah. You're still going to work and stuff and being like, I guess I'll get another tattoo and, you know.
Yeah, right.
Still going, what am I going to have for dinner?
So you pulled yourself out of this?
I pulled myself out. I was sharing a house with my then partner at the time, which was located in a very spidery backyard. So I wasn't crazy, but it was a matter of how you saw the spiders.
Right.
And I literally pulled myself out of it in that I like moved out of that house and at the same time left that partner.
Right.
And so any spiders that I saw after that point, I either didn't notice or when I saw them, they didn't seem to conform to a grander pattern because there was this awful, this other awful problem happening in my life.
Right.
That,
Yeah, interesting. And so how has that affected the show then? Because if you were discussing more of the spider thing in the first iteration of the show.
It's so interesting because when I first came on the podcast with you and sort of said, spiders are following me.
Yeah.
That was during the time that it was happening.
Right.
And I really honestly believed that to be the case then.
Yeah.
And I was kind of doing it as a bit, but also I really did think that spiders were following me.
Right.
But I knew that it sounded crazy, so I thought that was funny, so I thought I'd say that. And that's when I registered that show and then kind of got to the end of the year. I was like, I got to write this show.
Yeah.
And tried every which way I could to make it about something other than like me being crazy and getting out of an unhealthy relationship.
Yeah.
And I tried and I tried and I couldn't. And so I just had to, in the end, write that show. And the show kind of asserted itself. The truth of the thing asserted itself.
Yeah. It's a purge, isn't it? Like sometimes writing a show, especially when, you know, a great bit of writing advice is to, you know, what are your problems? Write about your problems and work your way through your problems. And sometimes that can be a really healthy thing to do.
Mm.
And sometimes that can kind of ingrain the problem as well. So you have to be kind of careful with how you explore things, especially, you know, the thing that people don't take into account is, I say this to, you know, someone will want to tell a story about, you know, one of their parents dying or something terrible happening to a friend or something like that, or a terrible time in their lives. And you always say to the comedian, don't think about this show on opening night and closing night. You need to think about this in the middle of a festival when everyone's tired, when you probably have your smallest audience, when everyone's feeling a bit shit.
Mm.
Do you want to talk about it then?
Exactly.
Because if you want to talk about it, then you're going to be okay and you've got to make your show.
Yeah.
You've got to make it robust enough that it can survive the middle Wednesday of a festival.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I mean, I also was really wary of doing this show, and I managed to make, as I say, I managed to, and this is not just like me frantically sort of worried that people will freak out, although, you know, there is that too. I don't want to scare people off, but like I really was quite firm on not wanting it to be, you know, a show about capital M, capital I mental illness or, yeah, you know, capitalized abusive relationships or anything like that. Because right, I'm not like Gadsby. It's not my 11th year. Yeah. You know, it's my third year. And I really firmly believe that it takes a very deft touch to the more directly you want to deal with some really difficult subject matter.
Yeah.
You have to be so careful with that. And it takes a very experienced hand, I think. And yeah, you also need a bit of time with it. And this is pretty yeah, fresh for me. And I'm yeah, aware of that. So I wanted to do it without doing it. And I think I've managed to find a way to do that, to sort of explore that kind of experience and to like literally spend an hour submerging people in, I think, a pretty fun way.
Yeah.
Like, deranged, like what's real, what's not, like the lived experience of kind of going, going through that in yeah, a way that I think a lot of people can relate to, because we all kind of reach for superstition and get a bit lost, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people, you know, I know that I do anyway. You start reading your star sign more. Oh. A lot of people read their star signs more when things are really off.
Absolutely.
Key.
Yeah. Just to get any, like, even if you don't believe in star signs,
exactly,
you might read something that, oh, you know what? That's actually good advice.
Yeah. You latch on and that's where the magical thinking comes into it, this kind of capacity for magical realism that we have, whether or not we're religious, whether or not we think we do.
Yeah.
We seek to impose order on a chaotic universe the more troubled we are, that, you know, tends to correlate.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the part that, you know, people can relate to. So it's about that without kind of, yeah, going into the...
And there's all types of...
The nuts and bolts, the cut yeah, and thrust of it being, you know, truly awful.
A friend of mine who, you know, has a big house and a wife and lovely child and, you know, is doing financially very well, hit a point where his magical thinking, he confessed to me that for the last few months he's been buying 3 lotto tickets a week.
And that's exactly his magical 3 thinking. Every time, exactly 3.
Tuesday, what did he say? Something like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, something yeah, like that. I guess they're the big ones. And,
yeah,
and that's he just, like, he didn't even quite clock that he was doing it.
Yes, yeah.
It was just sort of like something happened. He was like, oh, God, lotto, lotto. And then he was like 4 or 5 months into it, and he was like, what? I've never bought lotto in my life.
You never start out from a reason point of view. You never kind of go, I will do this because I believe that, you know, like in Burma, there's this concept called yadia, right? Which right, is because there are very superstitious quarters within that culture, and
yeah,
there's a concept called yadia, which is, I hope I'm getting this right, but this is how it was told to me by Burmese people when I was there for the election in 2013.
Yeah,
The changing of future, the changing of present deeds to avert future events,
right,
basically future harm, and that I was told at the time is why Burma has all these or Myanmar has all these cars that are designed to drive on the left side of the road, because right, they were a British colony.
Yep.
But they're all driving on the right side of the road, which, if you think about it,
right,
is really very unsafe.
Yes. Yeah,
and
how bizarre.
All the signs face as if you're supposed to be driving on the left-hand side of the road, but everyone drives on the right-hand side of the road.
Right.
And that was because some years ago, decades, I believe, there was some yadia done, like under the principles of yadia.
Yeah.
The government changed the policy overnight.
Right.
From that you should all switch over and start driving on the other side of the road. But, you know, Myanmar's not a place where you're getting big shipments of new cars all the time, and people are, you know, the secondhand car market is pretty, you know, pretty much the only car market.
Yeah.
And there wasn't an abundance of public funds to go turning all the signs around, I guess. So you've got this, like, hodgepodge signs facing in different directions and all the cars driving on the other side of the road. That's, like, state level magical thinking.
Right.
That's like, that's, but that's not how it starts out.
Right, right, right.
That's like where it could end up.
Yeah.
But it's not like, I don't think, you know, Myanmar wrote that into a law.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they didn't write the, like, we believe in yadia into, like, that's not in the constitution.
Yeah.
But you just end up doing it without
yeah.
really knowing why.
Yeah,
and then if someone asks you, it's only when someone asks you, why did you do that? And you're like, oh, well, because, you know, to avoid this other much more terrible thing happening in 3 years, you know, or like, oh, I just did it.
And suddenly it's this thing that is just a part
ritual.
Of you.
Yeah.
And that's what it's become for my friend. He's just doing lotto. So that's his magical thinking. Well, my numbers are going to come up.
Yeah. Well, the magical thinking's really dialed down for me. So I think maybe because I've like had to write about it in the show and all of a sudden I'm like, you know, I'm regarding it coolly from a distance.
Yeah.
And so I'm temporarily partially inoculated
yeah.
against some kinds of magical thinking.
Yeah.
And so I, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see when it seeps back in.
Look. Probably around showtime.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
everyone, all the performers get really superstitious around showtime. And you get these stupid rituals that you do every day before the show.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
like, oh, because I had a really good show on Tuesday and that's yeah. because of these socks.
Yeah. I listened to back when I did the shows in 2007, the Three Colours Hamo shows, I listened to the same playlist half an hour before I had to go into my room
yes.
every night.
Songs are a big one. What was on the playlist?
The main one, it was a... So each of those shows was themed musically, so I didn't want to. So it was first one was the Beatles, then it was the Beach Boys, and then it was Bowie. And so I kind of was flitting around that, but the main song that I kept coming back to was George Harrison's song that he wrote for John Lennon after he'd been murdered.
Mm.
And so I was listening to that one over and over again, and it was, I don't know, it was just, I can hear Billy Preston's organ, I can hear his vocal, and
I was still working with Billy Preston at that point.
For this one he was, yeah. So I can kind of still picture where I was sitting and where I would go and just kind of sit there and just listen to that, and that was part of my ritual for that run. Funny festival rituals.
Festival rituals, that's a whole other podcast.
We'll have to finish up. So two things before you go. One is, where can people get tickets for Newcastle, Adelaide and Melbourne?
Yes. So the tickets for Newcastle are up on the brand new Comedy Club's website. So Newcastle Comedy Club. You can also find it via my socials. That's February 4, so quite soon.
Yep.
And then Adelaide Fringe, the website's live now. That's happening at Gluttony in February. And yep. I can't remember the dates because I have too many dates.
It's too many dates. But it's in February.
It's in February. You can find it on the website, Adelaide Fringe. There's only one of it. And also, of course, Melbourne International Comedy Festival. I'll be performing at Butterfly Club.
Great.
So you can find tickets on the Butterfly Club website or, of course, the festival website too.
Finally getting back to the Butterfly Club.
Yes.
Because you were meant to be there last year, weren't you?
Oh, I think I've cancelled like three seasons.
Three seasons, yeah.
So
I feel like every time we catch
lucky
up.
Lucky fourth, yeah. Keep promising to
this
come
one's
to the Butterfly
happen.
Club. Yeah, no, this one's happening.
And what do you think of Licorice Pizza?
Oh, I loved it. I know this is not a typical kind of takeout from a Paul Thomas Anderson film, but it felt, because it's so stylized, right?
Yeah.
But it felt more like life.
Yep.
Than any other film that I've seen recently.
Yes.
Because it didn't fix its focus, its gaze on any one thing. It just sort of moved from thing to thing to thing to thing, and things just happened to these people. And they were flawed, but it didn't, like, you often feel like you're having your hand held and you're sort of guided through a film with, like, a very specific window, and it's all very curated and it just happens. You felt like another observer in this film.
Yes.
And you just were another person who happened to be at scene and scene. And you're like, oh, my God, this is what life is like. Things just happen, and then the next thing happens, and the next thing happens. And by the end of the film, you're like, wait, what was the waterbed business like?
Right.
You know, what did that happen?
Yeah.
So that was my kind of key impression.
It's I've discussed this before, but it feels like watching someone remember a very important time in their life.
Yes, yeah.
How old? So I'm really curious about this because I've heard a few people talk about it, and nobody seems to agree with this. But how old do you reckon Alana's character was?
She says, I'm 25.
She also says she's 28.
But she corrects that instantly.
Right. But she also pauses the first time she says she's 25. And that makes, like, so anyway, the reason I bring that up is because it's interesting. I read one of the best reviews of it, which was awful. But this guy was just, you know, it turns up in your algorithm. And normally I don't read these things, but I read the heading and I went, what? And then I read the review and it was, he was disgusted. This is encouraging, you know,
Child molestation
and all of this kind of stuff, and talked about how she was awful and the most unlikable person. It didn't make any sense that this kid would even be into her, and blah, 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 blah. And I got to the end, I was like, God, I'm dying to know more about this reviewer. And then I read, and, you know, this reviewer liked things. My favorite TV shows, The Witcher. Love the MCU. Think Snyder Cut's fantastic. It's like, why the fuck are you reviewing this movie? And then I read some comments underneath and people were getting stuck into him. And I was like, why are you getting stuck into him? Who gives a shit? But anyway, so one of the things that I wonder about the film is I wonder if she's that much older, because she's the youngest of three and she's still living at home. And I wonder, because I get this, what I loved about her character was, and I felt this was very relatable, was this longing to be somewhere else and this longing to not be trapped in the life that she could potentially be trapped in. And, you know, you see it from the start when she's
panic-stricken.
Oh, yeah. And I kind of wonder if, like, I know she's older, but I kind of wonder if she's actually 20.
Yeah, that's interesting. 21. It could actually be really, it is... I think they want you to have the impression that she, like, if you were supposed to bet that she's 25, but there's a definite ambiguity there because you just stop trusting her in general. She's an unreliable narrator of her own life. They both are. They're both like little hustlers and little liars.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic, but not in a sinister way. Like, it's all quite innocent and childlike.
No, it's trying to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's trying to survive. And on the age thing and, you know, the kind of, you know, question of the ethics of that age gap, because obviously that comes up for you immediately in the film. You're like, oh, that's a big age gap. I wonder. But then the next thing you observe almost immediately is how fickle the power play is between them.
Yes.
And at any given scene, the power could be located within, you know, with either party.
Yeah.
And the laws that govern where that power is located are also very hard to discern, but it's mesmerizing to watch that power move around between those two people.
And as soon as bad things happen, that power play dissipates and you know that they just like each other, because they always go to help each other, you know.
There's that beautiful supercut of the running at the end.
I love that as well. And my friend said, oh, that was a bit over the top. And I was like, sometimes I feel like when you get to the end, you deserve a reward.
Yeah.
And that was a rewarding scene.
Also, you know, that's a lot of stuff to remember. Like I said, it's a lot. I need a little help.
Yeah. You know, what I'm fascinated by, and mainly the reason I wanted to ask you about the film, is that there's a lot of criticism of the man who owns the Mikado and the way he speaks to his two Japanese wives.
Right, of course.
And it's fascinating because the pushback I've seen is that both scenes are racist and...
No, the character is racist and that's different from the scene being racist.
Oh, no, no, no. Right. Yeah, no, no, no. Like, but that's what I was about to say. That's what... Yeah. So when I laughed when I saw that happen, I was laughing at him for being awful. And also, like, when I was growing up, I knew people like that. Like, I knew older people that talk like that, you know?
Right, and just as a thought exercise as well. I mean, you know, there have been films that depict an era in history and leave out whether it's sexism or racism.
Right.
And those films are criticized because they, you know, are erasing that really important experience, this ugly part of history. They're like whitewashing it or whatever the case may be. And so you could just as easily make that case.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reading Milan Kundera at the moment because I've never read him before.
Yeah.
Book of Laughter and Forgetting.
Right.
And he's kind of renowned as like a renowned. I mean, misogyny, sexism, it's sort of they're easy terms to apply, and, you know, it's often a lot more nuanced than that, and he was a man of his time.
Yeah.
But the way that he depicts women is often, it's, you know, he really objectifies women. It's all very male-gazy, the book. That's right. Like some of the sort of feminist critique that's been made of Milan Kundera, and I was aware of that before I'd read his books, and I started reading him just in the last few days. And it's true, but you don't... Yeah, I don't know. And that's by contrast.
Yeah.
That the book doesn't stand in condemnation of the character who is being sleazy.
Right.
It's just depicting someone who happens to be like that, and it's the point is not that they are sleazy or sexist, they just also happen to be, and that's kind of unremarkable, and that's why his books get called, you know, sexist.
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
And sexist or whatever. Am I a shit feminist? It's so hard to know. But in contrast...
Depends on the feminist you're talking to.
Yeah, right, exactly. But in contrast, that film, Licorice Pizza, was very much... It stood in condemnation of the man who owned the Mikado.
Well, that's like, what I thought
the
as
joke
well.
Was, the joke was at his expense. Like, it wasn't, we hate him, he has to die, and, like, you know, he doesn't get his comeuppance or anything. So it's not like a traditional morality tale. But no. He was ridiculous and he was laughable.
Well,
and we were laughing at him.
And it also shows you that a dimwit could have a career back then. And so, of course, to me, that's why Gary sees a waterbed and thinks, well, you know what, I can run a waterbed shop. Or, you know, hey, pinballs are coming back. Well, I'll just turn the waterbed place into a pinball place, you know.
I understood something, like, often talked about in the American character that is rarely demonstrated so... in such a crystal clear way, and it's like that hustler thing, like that, you know, American Hustler. I don't know. There are so many works of art that seek to portray that, but never has anything gone so like neatly to the heart of it as that film. So, like, depicting this 16-year-old just being like, oh, the pinball laws just changed, I'm going to start a pinball parlor.
Yeah.
Oh, what? Like, what do you mean you're a 16-year-old bed who owns a waterbed company and it's quite successful?
Yeah.
And you're selling to Barbara Streisand. What do you mean? Like, Streisand. But you believed it and you went along with it. You're like, oh, this is the thing that people talk about in America.
Yes.
And it's neither admirable nor evil. It's like somewhere in between. It just is.
It is. Well, you know what I found fascinating is because I was surprised by the, when I first saw the movie, the discourse around those two scenes with his Japanese wife.
Mm.
And so I wanted to understand where people were coming from as much as possible. And so I read, you know, a few condemnations of it. But you know what was fascinating was in all of the condemnations of those scenes, no one talked about when Alana goes and meets Gary's agent and how anti-Semitic the woman is.
Massively anti-Semitic.
Yeah. Not one person mentioned. And so it's like, well, I wasn't sitting in that scene going, ha, 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 yeah, look what she's saying. Ha, ha, suck shit, Alana. Just as I wasn't looking at that guy and going, ha, 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 he's making fun of Japanese people. It was like, it was a condemnation of him and it was a condemnation of her. But it was also saying, this is what the times were like and this is why, you know, it kind of... spoke to the sense of, you know, even going to the mayor, being incapable of, or the guy running for mayor, being incapable of showing his real life, the claustrophobia of that suburb and wanting to break free of it and get away from it.
Yeah.
That was my take anyway.
And watching people succeed in spite of all those, you know, watching no one get, none of the, like, quote baddies in these, you know, acts of discrimination get their comeuppance, and watching the hard-done-by party succeed despite could on one level be read as, you know, like the moral failure of that work of art.
Right.
Like, in a very Orwellian sense, like if we are holding art to that standard. But, you know... that's how it was. That's how it is. And to see people succeed acknowledges the reality despite that, or continue despite that.
Yeah.
And the bad guy not get their comeuppance reflects the reality and acknowledges what's happened.
Yeah. And if you don't think that the world is still like that, turn on your TV, watch any AFL commentary and look at all of the players up there.
Do I have to?
No. You're already on top of it. But for anyone listening, like, if you don't think that the world is still like that, there's all these AFL commentators who have done awful things throughout the years, and guess what they're doing? they're commentating on the footy and still hanging out. So, you know.
They're cool. Yeah.
All right. Great to see you. And I'll have to... So you're going to do the Sydney Comedy Festival? Or?
That's the plan. Although I don't... at this stage, nothing is confirmed, but I assume. I've never not done it. Right. So,
yeah. Well, I hope the shows go ahead. I hope there's no outbreak anywhere. Oh,
thank you.
Because there's nothing worse than working on a show, especially something that is, even though it's a comedy show and it's presented in a way that everyone can enjoy, it's still a personal work. And, you know, like I want you to be able to experience it and do it now, because if you get put off, that show, like, you can do another version of the show, but it won't be
the
show.
It's a time and a place, yeah. Thank you. I'm really excited to do it.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing it when I can finally get to it. And if anyone out there is from Ireland and knows that if you kill a spider, that it destroys a part of your imagination, if you can confirm it for Angela.
Or if Hamo has been had, then also let us know.
Yeah. And if you're a spider and it's bullshit, keep your distance, mate. Thank you to Ange for dropping by to touch base with me. So good to see her. I had not seen her in a long time, and I just think she's fantastic. I'm putting up links for her new show, I've Got 99 Problems, and here is an exhaustive list of them at our Big Squid Facebook page. Ange will be in Newcastle and Adelaide next month. That's February. So if you're keen to check out her show, head over to the Facebook page to find the appropriate link. A big thank you to Mark. No last name, just Mark, for being our Patreon subscriber for the episode. I hope you enjoyed our chat today, Mark. Remember, if you'd like to have an episode dedicated to you and access to all the bonus work I create, head over to Patreon and look up Justin Hamilton Big Squid and you'll find a tier that is perfect for you. It has been a slow and exhausting start to the year, and when I'm feeling that way, I look for inspiration wherever I can find it. And with that in mind, I found this quote from Walt Whitman that I thought might be the perfect antidote for what ails me at the moment, and I hope that you get something out of it too. Walt Whitman said, "Keep your face towards the sunshine, and shadows will fall behind you." Until then.